Wake up, everyone. It's time for a call to action. Welcome to Call to Action Today, where there are no sacred cows, with your host, Steve Noble, just an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and he's calling you out every week to live the Christian life in your home, your work, and even in politics. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH, or check him out online at c2atoday.org. And now, with some much-needed cough medicine for the church, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, we're going to do a little constitutional lesson here a little bit later on the show today. This is Steve Noble. It is Call to Action Radio. Great to be with you. We will be talking about, I've got my little pocket copy of the Constitution right here in my hot little hands, Article 5, which deals with the Convention of the States, which is a movement that is afoot here in America, desperately needs to happen. It's a workaround, really, that our founding fathers put in place, which would give us lackeys out here in the states the ability to bypass Congress in order to propose and then even ratify a constitutional amendment or amendments, plural, to the U.S. Constitution. So we're going to have the gentleman who's the executive director of the Convention of States here in North Carolina, where I live and broadcast from, to talk about Convention of the States, what's going on, what's this organization up to. They've had some tremendous success, interestingly enough, I think it was last fall. They did a simulation. They had people, representatives, not elected representatives, but some of them, but they had a simulation of what would a convention of the states look like to have a discussion about amendments to the U.S. Constitution in order to get them presented and then passed. So we're going to talk about that. That's an incredibly important movement under afoot here in America that I'm excited about. And Jim DeMint's involved with that now. He was at the Heritage Foundation, and Mark Meckler, who was one of the original founders of the Tea Party and the Tea Party Patriots and the Tea Party organizations that were out there, and they were just in North Carolina. So we're going to get an update. What is the Convention of the States movement? Where have they had success in the states? Where is it going to next? What's going on here in this state of North Carolina, where I live and broadcast from? And just a really, really important topic as we continue to just get frustrated more and more. So with the swamp up in Washington, D.C., Shannon Joy, who is a great conservative Christian as well, broadcaster out of New York, calls Washington, D.C., in terms of the party, the right, the left, the Republicans, the Democrats, she's taken to calling them the unibrow. I think I mentioned that maybe last week, that there's it's kind of all connecting in the middle, and it's not two eyebrows anymore. It's a unibrow. And certainly you see that going on with what's happened in the House and now in the Senate on the alleged Obamacare repeal, which it isn't, and fix, which it's more like a tinkering, and that just came out. That news just broke today. Mitch McConnell punting on the vote. It doesn't look like they're going to get anything done. They wanted to have that voted on by July 4th. That's not happening. There's now a growing list of senators, conservative senators, that will not sign on to that bill. And that's kind of a mess, right? But Donald Trump coming out of a meeting today, and again, let me just go back and put my feet firmly on the ground with respect to our current president. I did not support Donald Trump in the primary. I supported him in the general election, of course, against Hillary Clinton. I felt like my pragmatic vote. There was nothing wrong with that. I wasn't doing anything wrong, compromising on my Christian principles, things like that. I did not hold Donald Trump in the highest esteem. I still don't. And I expected that he would be kind of a 60-40 president. I was hoping that 60% of what he did, I would be happy with, and fully expecting 40% that I wouldn't be too much centrist, too much to the left, whatever. And I think we're going to see that pretty much bear out to be true over the course of his 4 years and possibly 8 years. But he comes out of a meeting today and says, promises, before leaving, Trump made more comments about healthcare. Healthcare is working along very well. We're going to have a big surprise. Well, we have a great healthcare package. And when asked what that meant, he answered, we're going to have a great, great surprise. And, this is kind of this interesting way that our president chooses to communicate that I struggle with personally, just because it kind of sounds sophomoric to me. But obviously, he's a pretty intelligent guy. He built a billion-dollar business and very successful in the business world. But this thing's kind of fallen apart, and And listen, I mean, Rand Paul's standing up strong. Ted Cruz, for the most part, standing up strong. And Rand Paul said that half of the Republicans that hate it are conservatives like myself who went to the rally after rally after rally saying we're going to repeal Obamacare. And now we're not repealing it. We're keeping it, Paul said. These weak-kneed Republicans up here who are saying, oh, we've got to spend more money and we've got to keep Medicaid forever, the expansion, they need to get over themselves. Paul said Republicans need to remember what they were for, which was repealing Obamacare. So again, this is a massive challenge going on up in Washington, D.C. Once you institute a big government program, when's the last time they pulled one out of rotation? They don't. Because again, remember, we talked about this the other day. On the political front, that the people that, even in their own districts, even if they come from a conservative district, there's going to be people that if they repealed Obamacare, are not. There's going to be some people out there that aren't happy, and then you're going to get all of the political communications about, oh, you're taking people's health care, people are going to be dying on the streets, they're not going to be able to get taken care of. This is what typical Republicans do. They poison the water, they ruin the air, and they kill old people and children, right? Except who's the party that advocates, cheerleads for and funds the killing of unborn children. Of course, that's the Democrat Party talking about Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry at large. But so you get a bunch of Republicans that are just afraid to pay a political price because they want to, I would assume, I think this is probably accurate, they want to stay in the game. And then there's the old excuse, you know, I can't do any good if I'm not in office. And in order to be in office, I need to get elected. And if I tick off too many people, I can't get elected. So I can't do any good, right? So it's that circular reasoning, the dog chasing its tail. And so you get a bunch of spineless people up there. I think there might be 50 or 60 true, solid conservatives up on the Hill. And the rest, to quote Shannon Joy again, kind of a unibrow. And so that's why Convention of the States is such an important topic for us to understand, for us to be educated about, and hopefully on a state level, for that to be happening. Go around Congress. That's why our founding fathers really were quite brilliant. And they knew a concentration of power is a problem. That's a problem, right? So there's got to be a way around. How do you go around Washington, D.C.? How do you go around Congress? Easy. It's called the States, Convention of the States, Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution. I'll read it to you here before we get to our guest, which is going to be in the second half of the show. But right there, there's a way because the states are closer to the people, to you and to me. And so that gives states' rights a shot in the arm where we can go literally go around Congress, get enough states to sign on to a Convention of the States. We propose the amendments, and then we can get them passed and institute amendments to the U.S. Constitution, completely blowing off, if you will, Congress, which obviously is what we need to do. So we're going to talk about that. But I've got a couple other stories here I want to get to in the next segment. A couple of things that will, well, Tim Tebow, this is a good story. And then another story that will enrage you about my friend Ann Graham Lott, some typical garbage. We're going to have a state director for the Convention of the States, a great movement going on across America right now. State director here in North Carolina, Mike Falkenberry. He's going to be with us for the last two segments of the show to talk about this movement. What's going on with the Convention of the States organization? Why do we need it? They just had some big rallies and stuff going on here in Raleigh, North Carolina. There's movement around the country, and so I'm looking forward to talking to Mike about that. I'll before we get to the end of this segment today and hit another commercial break, I'll read for you word for word out of the U.S. Constitution. What is Article 5? It's a way for us to go around this crazy Congress in order to affect change via amendment, the amendment process, one of which might be nice. I know this is a crazy idea, that we would have an amendment calling for a balanced budget, amendment. Every year by constitutional fiat, the Congress and the president, he has to sign it. They have to come up with a balanced budget, which will require some adult, difficult, mature choices. We cannot continue to live our lives on the U.S. Titanic because it's going right to the bottom of the ocean. We're going to have to jump off the USS Titanic, where everybody gets everything they want or allegedly need, and we're going to have to start learning how to live life on a shrimp boat, which is much more humble and not as many bells and whistles, not as many frills, and we're just going to have to, most people are going to have to learn to deal with less help from the U.S. government and free up the engine of our creativity, the Imago Dei, and even with our, listen, go all the way back to the Clinton administration. Now, when they passed some meaningful welfare reform, guess what happened? Things got better. You don't keep people on welfare. You don't keep people on the state dime. Why? Well, for me as a follower of Christ, because it's literally raping the image of God in them. That's why so many people that have been on welfare for years and have been wards of the state for years are just, they just look like, talk like, sound like, act like broken people. And that's because they are. God did not create a single human being to do nothing. He created all of us to work, to be productive, to be contributing to society, to care for one another. And the welfare state completely saps that out of people in their own sin nature, slothfulness, laziness, what have you, taking advantage of the system, gets coupled up with that. Now we have, what, 40 million people in America on food stamps? It's crazy. And they passed some meaningful welfare reform back then, and it worked. And so that's the kind of sober-minded adult thinking that we need. Instead of being afraid of the electorate, you have to do what's best for the electorate. And some of that is tough love. It just is. But man, it just you just can't expect that out of our Congress anymore, at least the vast majority of them. And so that's why we have to go down the road of the convention of the state. So I'm looking forward to that. Okay, a couple other stories I want to get to. I was just talking to my friends on Facebook Live, and let me just get this one off my chest. I was listening to Sean Hannity earlier on my way over here, and I listened to a little Hannity. I listened to a little Rush. I listened to a little Beck. I'm just kind of paying attention to them and what they're doing. And I've learned a lot from them over the years. When I started doing radio, I didn't know I was learning, but I was. And I listened to Sean Hannity go off on this. He just went off. This is how he started the show, that CNN did a panel discussion about refugees in the Middle East. And they happened to use little Elmo because they did something. And Elmo went over there with Sesame Street crew and was talking to kids, Syrian refugees and such. And so they had Elmo in there. And Sean Hannity, in this article that I'm looking at right now on DailyWire.com, new low. CNN uses Sesame Street's Elmo to attack Trump's travel ban. Well, Elmo actually never said anything about the travel ban on this little panel discussion they had on CNN. And so I don't jump as quickly on the bandwagon as I used to, because we talk about fake news, and there's certainly a lot of that going on. CNN obviously getting caught like a deer in the headlights multiple times recently. Veritas is doing a great job of exposing them. I shared some of those stories on the Facebook page, facebook.com/C2A radio, by the way. C2A as in called to action. That's the number two. facebook.com/C2A radio. And you can watch it, and CNN, you know, egregious, you know. But to jump on every little thing like this and to open one of the biggest, he's got the Rush is the biggest, then Sean, then Dave Ramsey, then Glenn Beck. So he's got the third, he's got the second biggest talk show in America. It's massive, reaching millions and millions of people a week. And to open up with Elmo because he's ticked off at CNN, which I understand. But I'm like, at what point? Why? Can't we talk about the really substantive things over and over again? Or a different angle on them, but when, and this happens, this isn't just Hannity, this happens on Facebook, this happens all over the place, where we just take a little story and read something into it, because I didn't really find anything all that offensive in here. Elmo, great, little kids around the world largely want the same thing. They want to be loved, they want to be cared for, they want to be able to play. Do they get some decent toys? In some parts of the world, that's a stick and a little wheel. And that's it. So he's appealing to our hearts about little refugee kids, and should we care about them? Absolutely. But all of a sudden, to turn Elmo into this terrible propaganda machine used by CNN to attack Donald Trump, to me, that was just over the top, really irrelevant, especially relative to other issues that we could be talking about. And I was like, okay, whatever. And I turned it off at that point. Okay, let's move along. Let's do something that's good. Let me cheer you up a little bit. Former NFL star, this is from the Christian Post, turned baseball player Tim Tebow, I love this guy, is being praised for the tremendous impact he made on the New York Mets Class A affiliate team, the Fireflies, and he said he's not worried about those who mock him on the field for his Christian faith. In a recent press conference held after the Columbia Fireflies game on Sunday, Tebow announced that he is being promoted to the St. Lucie Mets, the organization's Class A advanced team. When asked about being mocked for his Christian faith on the field by the River Dogs during the Fireflies match last week, the former NFL quarterback said he heard a little about all the jokes made about him. During the game against the River Dogs, the New York Yankees Class A affiliate, Charlie, the River Dogs mascot, was seen wearing the famous John 3:16 eye blacks and Tebowing throughout the game. Other pranks included playing the Hallelujah chorus each time Tebow went to bat. They also displayed on the big video screen a picture of him crying after Florida's loss to Alabama in the 2009 SEC Championship. The River Dogs apologized the same day after Tebow's Christian fans threw a fit on social media for their poor taste in jokes. The Mets also called the antics very minor league. Tebow, however, maintained that he is used to things like that happening. If they did some silly things, I didn't worry about it, he said. So that's what I love about Tim Tebow. This happens over and over and over again. He gets all this garbage. People say all these ridiculous things about him. And what does he do? He turns the other cheek. He handles it with great grace and self-control. And he's just like, you know, it doesn't bother me. And why do you think he believes that? Why do you think he can say that? Because the guy knows the scriptures. Jesus himself told us this was going to be the deal. Hey, they hated me. They're going to hate you. They hated me too. They're going to want to kill you. They wanted to kill me too. Hey, this is the deal. You follow me, you're going to be rubbing up against most of the world. And they're lost. There's Jesus on the cross being hammered to it with nails. And what does he say? He could have called down, remember this, he could have called down 12 legions of angels. That's about 60,000 angels. Two angels wiped out 120,000 Midianites. Two angels wiped out Sodom and Gomorrah, two massive cities. He could have called down 60,000 and he didn't. What did he do? What did he say? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Because they don't. The lost people in this world, which is most of them, don't know what they're doing. They don't get it. And so you turn the other cheek, you laugh it off, you don't freak out, you show self-control, you maintain your public witness, and you move on. Amen for you, Tim Tebow. Okay, Article 5. I'm going to get back to that. We're going to have Mike Falkenberry from the Convention of the States here in North Carolina get us all up to speed on this incredibly important movement when we come back here on Call to Action Radio. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Call to Action Radio. Great to be with you. Excited about our next guest. I just want to set this up, and I've been talking about this for a while. I've been teaching on it for 5 years as I teach a two-semester Constitution course, which is called Foundations of Freedom. I teach that here in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's a high school age, mostly high school age homeschoolers. I've had a couple hundred students over the last 5 years, and we'll be doing it again this fall. This summer, we finally put the whole thing on video. So we're going to put all 18 lectures. They're all about 25 to 35 minutes long, based on 18 chapters of this particular textbook that I use for Foundations of Freedom from a Christian perspective. And one of the things we talk about a lot is states' rights. We talk about federalism. We talk about the Constitution, of course. And one of the parts of the Constitution is as follows. Article 5. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to the Constitution, or, this is the best part, on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which, in either case, shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. So the convention of the states go around Congress and get to the Constitution to enact the changes that we need. That's what the convention of the states is all about. ConventionOfTheStates.com is the website, whether you're here in North Carolina, over in Iowa, down in Kansas or Oklahoma, down in Florida, maybe over in Ohio, wherever you happen to be listening. This is an issue that all of us need to be well aware of and active with, and somebody that's certainly active here in the great state of North Carolina, Mike Falkenberry, who's running the Convention of the States group here in North Carolina. Mike, thanks for calling in today. How are you?
I'm doing great, but I don't want to take credit for running it. I'm like a cat herder. But
that I am sure you are. Well, you're the state director here in North Carolina. Really appreciate you spending your time on that. An incredibly important movement. I met Michael Ferris years ago and started hearing about the Convention States a while back. But tell us about the Convention of the States in general, and then what's the conventionofthestates.com and the movement going on today? And then let's talk about where we're at and where we need to get to.
Absolutely, and I can't wait to do all three.
Cool.
You read Article 5 there, and most people, well, maybe not your audience, but the vast majority of people in the country, if they were listening, that's probably the first time they've ever heard Article 5 read to them. And that's unfortunate, but it's the founders' solution for when we get in the situation that we're in. They knew in 1787, when they wrote the Constitution, that eventually there would need to be adjustments and modifications, and things would change, and situations and circumstances would come up that would need to be dealt with. And they also knew the nature of man, that once they had some power, that they want to keep that power and expand that power. That's what human beings do. And they had just lived through that under King George, and fought a pretty valiant effort in the Revolutionary War to get out from under that, and they certainly didn't want us to return to anything remotely close to that style of government. So they provided a way. Actually, George Mason, 2 days before the end of the Constitutional Convention in 1787, realized, they had talked about it earlier, but he brought it up, that 2 days to go and we still haven't dealt with this. We've only provided one way to amend the Constitution, and that's by Congress. And if we ever need to rein in Congress or the federal government, they'll never do it themselves. We need another way. We need the states to be able to do it. So they added that second clause where 2/3 of the states could apply for a convention to propose amendments. It's not a convention to rewrite the Constitution. It's not a convention to get rid of the Second Amendment or the Bill of Rights or any of the other nonsense that people will sometimes claim that it is. It's simply a convention, which is nothing more than a meeting to propose amendments to the Constitution. And whether Congress proposes those amendments, 2/3 of Congress, or whether 2/3 of the states propose those amendments, it still has to be ratified in 38 states in a separate action. That's a really high bar, as it should be, but nothing can happen at the convention other than suggestions, proposals. Here's what we think is a good idea. It's still got to get ratified.
So it still has to pass the ratification test.
That's right. And that's 38 states, which means if you flip that 38 states over, that means only 13 states could stop anything. So it's really hard to get anything done, and then it should be. Madison said, the Constitution shouldn't be amended for light and transient reasons. That was a wise opinion. It should be serious. But I would tender that the situation and circumstances that we find us in now, with the extreme imbalance of power and authority between the states and the federal government, is such a circumstance. It's begging for our attention. I think that the founders, if we were able to bring them back to life and pull them into a room and describe to them what we're like today, they'd be appalled. And I think one of the first questions, if not the first question, is why haven't you done anything about it with the tool we gave you to address just such a circumstance?
Sure. So I guess there's two main goals here. We have to look at actually getting to the point where you can call a convention. So you got to get to the number of states for that. And then what happens once you're at the convention? What kind of amendments are we talking about? So let's start with the first one. We're going to hit a break in a few minutes, but let's start with the first one. And where are we at in terms of getting the number of states that we need to even call a constitutional convention?
Sure. And we're careful about constitutional convention as a term. I know that you understand what that means, but our opponents, those who are stirring up fear and doubt and so forth, and frankly just making up things, refer to what we're trying to do in Article 5 amendments proposing convention as a constitutional convention, so that they can pretend and try to convince people that it's the same thing that happened in 1787, which obviously it not only wasn't, but it couldn't have been, because the Constitution didn't exist at that point. That was the point of it. So we're careful, because terminology, because our opponents use that to try to pretend that the two are one and the same. So I bristle a little bit when I hear constitutional convention, although that is correct. It is a convention and it is constitutional. So far nationally, there are 12 states that have, and that's in a short period of time, 3.5 years or so.
Yeah, yeah.
12 states have made it through both chambers, have completed everything, and they're waiting on the rest of us to catch up.
Is there kind of like a statute of limitation? So somebody that one of the states votes for, they agree to be a part of this 3 years ago, and let's say it takes another 3 years or 4 years or even 5 years to get there. And let's say a state legislature change hands, does that become a problem at all? Can they kind of back out, I guess I'm asking?
Well, they could, but they would have to take some action unless in the application itself they were to put an expiration date, a sunset clause. North Carolina is very likely in theirs to have a 10-year. That's the plan, so that if once it's passed and you know within 10 years the rest of the states, required number of states, haven't done something similar, then it will expire and would have
right.
to be done over again or whatever. Now, in the meantime, if a state decided, and we passed it 3 years ago, and we want to change our mind, they have that option to do that. But it doesn't, if no expiration date, no sunset date is included in it, then it can stay active in you know, as long as it's out there. And there are
right.
some that are decades old that are
Got
just
it.
Sitting out there.
Again, we're talking to Mike Falkenberry. He's the state director of Convention of the States here in North Carolina. But if you go to conventionofthestates.com, you can find your state there and find out exactly what's going on in your home state. It doesn't matter whether you live in North Carolina or not. But, Mike, do you have a list handy of the states that have passed this so far?
Oh, well. I know that this year so far we've had Arizona, North Dakota, Texas, and Missouri, with Texas, Missouri being the most recent, and that was about 2 weeks after Texas was successful. So there's four this year. I'll try to remember the other eight. We've got Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Alaska, Indiana. Oh man.
Well, double check the list because we're coming up
Tennessee,
on a break here in a minute. And then let me ask you this right quick. Okay, let me ask you this question before we hit the break right quick. Tell me where we're at since I'm here in North Carolina. I'm right here in Raleigh. Where are we at with the state of North Carolina in terms of passing this?
We are within, I hope, hours of passing this. We passed just today. Your timing is perfect on this. Just today we passed through committee in the House.
We passed
the Senate in April, at the end of April. Went over to the House. We passed, we put in the Rules Committee. We put out a Rules Committee into the Judiciary Committee yesterday. Today that vote took place. We won 8-6 in out of committee. All Republicans are voting for us. All Democrats voting against us.
Of course.
And tomorrow we are scheduled to be have a floor vote. We don't know what time. We're not going to know what time. We just know sometime during the caucus for voting, our subject will come up and we'll have.
Now, will that so they'll vote first in the House and then they'll pass it? That'll go crossover over to the Senate. Is that how that will work?
The Senate's already done.
Oh, they're done yet? So we just need the House.
We're done tomorrow. We will become state number 13, I'm confident, tomorrow. But we've got
that's
to win
totally
that
awesome.
Tomorrow.
That's totally awesome. I'm going to put you on hold, Mike, and then we're going to come back after the commercial break talking to Mike Falkenberry from here, the state director in North Carolina, Convention of the States. Now, let's go down this road with Mike when we come back. Let's assume we can get this pulled together. You get enough states. What are we going to talk about? What kind of amendments would be proposed? What would that discussion look like? I also want to talk about the simulation that took place last fall. Really, really cool story there. This is Steve Noble with Call to Action. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble. It's Call to Action Radio. Great to be with you talking about one of my favorite subjects today, which is right governance, the U.S. Constitution. Many of you know that I teach Foundations of Freedom. That's a civics, mostly civics, but also Constitution course that I've taught for 5 years now for homeschoolers, high school age homeschoolers here in the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area. I've had a couple hundred students over the last 5 years, which has been a huge blessing. And also teach Christian ethics, and we videoed all of those lectures. There's 18 of them, and it's all from a Christian perspective, a Christian worldview. So it deals with the founding of our country and the education and the worldview of our founding fathers, and what God was doing in the colonies and the First Great Awakening. All of that, it's a fascinating subject. And then getting into civics, talking about the three branches of government coming out of the Constitution. We look at the Constitution, of course, the three branches of government, how the whole thing works, how it's designed to work, how it isn't working now. I try to to keep my overt opinions. I do enough of it in there, but it's not obnoxious. So a family that might not be super conservative, parents might not even be Republicans or whatever, would still get great value in this course. So we're going to make it available online this summer. I'll let you know when that happens. But one of the things that we're talking about there is the Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, talking about how you amend the Constitution. Of course, you can do that with the legislature, or you can do it with 2/3 of the several states shall call a convention for proposing amendments. So the founding fathers, brilliant as they were, gave us a way to get around the Congress and bring it closer to the people in order to amend the U.S. Constitution. That's why we're talking to Mike Falkenberry today, who's the state director here in North Carolina for the conventionofthestates.com. And an incredibly important topic. And hopefully, God willing, the House here in North Carolina will vote tomorrow on this movement. And North Carolina would become then the 14th state to go down this road, 14 on the way to 2/3 of the several states out there. And then once we get there, then we'll talk about that with Mike. What happens if we actually get to that? And let's make sure we're praying and getting active on that. And one way you get active, and you just call to action after all. That's why I got into this radio world in the first place when I became a bit of an activist myself back in 2004. So you can go to conventionofthestates.com and begin that that necessary work that we all have to do because our federal government cannot be trusted anymore. Mike, I always like to remind people, and thanks for being here with us today. I always like to remind people, and you can also find Convention of the States here for North Carolina on Facebook, that, hey, the 27th Amendment, which got proposed in the late 1700s, which was to deal with congressional pay raises that they couldn't get them until after the next election, and that didn't get passed until the 1990s under Bill Clinton. You mentioned earlier that our founding fathers understood human depravity. They understood the influence of power, and they certainly knew that well because of their biblical worldview, and we do well to follow them in that, and that's why this is such an important conversation. So let's assume that tomorrow North Carolina, God willing, becomes the 14th state. Once we get to the magic number, Mike, what's going to happen as all these states come together to then discuss amending the U.S. Constitution?
Well, I like your assumption that we're going to win, and I think we will, and I agree with your primary focus there. We do need to pray, and I will say that all our meetings, all our calls, everything we do before we begin anything, we bathe it in prayer, and I do think that's frankly the key to our success so far, and I think it'll continue forward that way. But once we get the convention, once we get that required 34th state, and the convention is called, and we show up, the three things that our application, and it's the same in every state, those that have passed and those that have pending legislation, which is this year, I think there's 36 or 37 states that have had active legislation related to our project. Every application is identical in wording, at least the part about what it's going to be about. The where to's and where for's and so forth may be a little different, but the meat and potatoes of the application is exactly the same in every state. And what it says is three ideas are what are going to be discussed at this convention. The first would be, not necessarily in the order they'll be discussed, but the first one we have listed is term limits for all federal officials. And that could apply clearly to Congress, and I think that's frankly a very good idea. Jim DeMint is now fully on board with us as a senior advisor, and I was just spent yesterday with him, and he said it's his experience after being in Congress and being around it for several years after that, that after about 10 years or so, he's yet to find anybody who's still fighting. They've had the fight taken out of them or been warped and altered. Sometimes they go to Washington to change Washington, and instead Washington changes them.
That's right.
But at the very least, they just get beat down by the system, and they can't change it from within. So we need to fix that. But that could apply to Congress. It could apply to Supreme Court justices or all federal judges. That's up to the convention, to those delegates to debate and to talk about and to argue about, and then to come out of there and say, here's who we want it to apply to, and here's how many years we think the term should be.
Well, you'll appreciate this, Mike. I often say it on the air, and I definitely say it when I'm teaching these students in Foundations of Freedom. I say I think we should impeach a sitting U.S. Supreme Court justice once every 25 years, just to remind them that we can.
Yeah, whether they need it or not. I agree.
Lay down the law. Hey, you guys work for us, and you may think you're in there for life, but you get out of bounds, and you go down the road to judicial activism. Hello, gay marriage, and then you know we need to take
that's
them
right.
out of that. We need to take them out of that position. So anyway, sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
No, that's right. The Constitution says they should serve in periods of good behavior, and I think they just dropped the good, and they just
Absolutely.
Serve during periods of behavior,
so yeah.
whatever it looks like.
So number one, number two.
All right, term limits and then fiscal restraint on Congress. That could include a balanced budget amendment, but it's not limited to a balanced budget amendment. You have to be careful with a balanced budget amendment in that there's a number of ways to do that, and the way Congress will do it if they're forced to and not constrained otherwise is to raise taxes. Or to dump more unfunded mandates on the states. What they won't do is stop spending more and more money unless we shut off the ways for them to get around that.
Right.
So real, true fiscal restraints. I personally think some modifications to the Commerce Clause would do more good than a balanced budget amendment. I'm certainly not against a balanced budget amendment. But, Alexander Hamilton was considered a liberal in his time, certainly today.
Yeah.
But his idea was, in essence, if the states can spend money on something, then the federal government can't. I really like the sound of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
that's federalism.
Spend money on education,
yeah,
on energy, all kind of things that the federal government has no business being involved with in the states. We got to give them back before they can't just spend money on everything in the world. That's
right.
The second idea. Third idea is somewhat of an umbrella. It's any proposal that would reduce the power and jurisdiction of the federal government. Take that power out of Washington, return it to the states.
Right.
So any idea that gave them more power, more authority, or lessened the power of the states or the people in any way couldn't even be talked about here. So those are the three ideas: term limits, fiscal restraints on Congress, and reducing the size and jurisdiction power of the federal government.
Yeah, well, immediately, and this shows up on the convention of the state's website as well, talking about, and then the other side of it, COSaction.com, talking about the General Welfare Clause, otherwise known as the Elastic Clause, so the government can do whatever it needs to do in order to implement the policies that it sees fit in doing, and that's why you got this slow death. And then, of course, it's sped up of federalism. That how do you define that, the Elastic Clause, the General Welfare Clause? What's in the general welfare of the American people? Well, that's why we're even talking about health care. Why is the federal government involved in the health care system? They can go to the General Welfare Clause and say, well, of course, that's for the general welfare of the people of the United States. So the whole thing's gotten upside down with the death of federalism.
Right.
But this is the way, this is our way to go around these people up in D.C. who are not looking out for us anymore and to take the matter into our own hands in the states, which was the preference of our founding fathers anyway.
Absolutely. We have forgotten, at least a lot of us have forgotten, the federal government is a child of the states. The states created the federal government. You would never know that now if you just woke up and looked at it. If you don't know anything about history, you would assume that, oh, wow, the federal government lets the states do things. Well, that's the exact opposite of the way it was designed,
yeah,
the way that the founders intended.
Yeah, exactly.
We've come full circle. And, frankly, I think we're going to resolve this. There's two ways, ultimately, that this situation gets resolved. And this is the peaceful one. So I think it's the one we need to pursue.
Where's most of the blowback on this movement coming from?
Well, it's interesting you ask. We sort of wear it as a badge of honor, but just as a matter of fact, on Good Friday of this year, of all days, George Soros organized a group of a coalition of 230 organizations, Planned Parenthood, ACLU, NAACP, the SEIU, AFL-CIO, on and on and on. La Raza, name the liberal left-wing group, and it's on the list.
Yeah.
They coalesced together and issued a press release, a statement saying how much they opposed what we're doing.
Of course they do.
Yeah, exactly. No surprise there. And, you can tell a lot by your friends and by your enemies. If your friends are Jim DeMint, Tom Coburn, Michael Ferris, Robbie George, John Eastman, Mark Levin, on and on and on. If those are your friends and your enemies are George Soros and the groups that he funds, you must be doing something pretty good.
Yeah, you're running with the right crowd.
Exactly.
Well, of course, then George Soros, because for all of them, the federal government is their meal ticket. the federal government is their path to power. It has been for decades.
That's right.
And of course, they're going to fight that. And that's why it's centralized government. It's centralized power. It's the oligarchy versus us. It's versus you, Mike. It's versus me. It's versus the states.
That's
and this is a fight that needs to happen. How can people get involved here in North Carolina?
You mentioned it, conventionofstates.com. Please, if you think this is a good idea, we're voting tomorrow. Please, I'm really begging folks.
Yeah,
call
right.
your House rep. Call yep. them tonight and let them know you want them to support this tomorrow when we vote on it.
Yeah,
please
awesome.
Do
Mike,
that for us.
Absolutely. Mike, thanks so much for being with us today. Thanks for the great information. Thanks for all your hard work. We're going to keep backing it as much as we possibly can.
Thank you. God bless you, brother.
Thank you, brother. You too. And there you go. So call your, if you're here in North Carolina, and many of you are, send an email, call your state House representative, tell them to vote for the calling of the Convention of the States, and let's all make sure we're praying about it together. This is Steve Noble. This is Call to Action Radio, and God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.